There seems to be mutual tithing going on between Abraham and Melchizedek. They're each like giving each other gifts. Melchizedek gets the best of the booty from Abraham after the conflict of the kings, the clash of the titans. These are big boys, Abraham and Melchizedek. These are A-listers. And the thing that's without question here is that Melchizedek is the greater than Abraham. It's like Melchizedek, the priest, king of Salem, priest of God, the magnificent one, the eminent one, the great one. You had to work with this guy because he was a priest. He was a go-between with God. You had to work with this guy. If you're coming into his territory with booty, you better be giving him a booty call, because you better be giving him the best of the booty. You better be giving him at least 1/10 of the best, not the tail end of it, but the best of it. And he can make it good for you. Melchizedek can make it good for you. But you don't try to give Melchizedek the slip. He can make it good for you, but he can make it very, very bad for you. You don't want to mess with this guy. So I'm going to continue in Hebrews 7. But first I have to tell you something personal here. It's like I don't know what's going on here, except I don't know. Tell me if you're feeling the same thing, but this earth and the system, the cosmos here, the people on the planet, it's pretty much played out for me, which is getting a little scary, honestly. It's getting a little worrisome. I don't worry about it. Let's just say it's troublesome. And either this thing is about over. You know how when people die, they're in the process of dying, and they curl up like in the fetal position, and they're still alive, but God grants them this mercy, and in his mercy, the world goes really dim. Like the things, even their loved ones touching them, hugging them, they start, the dying will distance themselves. But I don't think it's even a conscious distancing. It's a natural gift that God gives to the human being that starts winding it down, and you go to this little internal place. It's a little happy place. God gives you a happy place, I'm convinced, when you're dying, and you crawl into a little cavern of the self, and all the shit of the earth doesn't bother you anymore at all, because you're cranking down the shutters, right? You're pulling the blinds. That's what's happening, honestly, with me. But the thing is, I'm a young guy. I'm not sick. I'm not physically dying. And yet, this is happening. I mean, what the hell? I'm young, I'm viable, and yet I feel like I'm curling up in the fetal position, and I don't give a crap about my hair, or sounds bad. I'll say it and then I'll modify it. Don't give a crap about the people of the world. But that's not altogether true, because I do, but you know, I've been teaching you over the years, 1 Corinthians 7, Paul says, you know, those having wives, be as not having them, those buying as not having, those using the world as not using it up, this whole thing, hold on loosely, that's what I'm experiencing. I've been experiencing that for about a decade now, but it is in hyperdrive. It's a little troublesome, honestly. So it's like, if Christ doesn't return soon, I feel like I'm screwed. You know what I mean? But having said that, look, the only thing that matters, the most important thing, is to continue this work. I look forward to talking to you every day. I'm getting the books out. I finished the Romans series. I'm going to start a new series. So I'm not stringing my hammock up anywhere, folks. I don't even go to the beach. I don't even see the beach. I live 2 miles from the beach, and I hardly ever go there. I only go there when people visit me, honestly, because I don't care about the beach. I like knowing it's there. But, for instance, my neighbor here, the guy living in the cottage right in front of me, which adjoins our house, he just went with his daughter to the beach. I said, where are you going? He's going to the beach. And I'm thinking, you poor sap, you know. You got to sit out there at that beach and do nothing for 2 hours. It's like, I cannot just do nothing for 2 hours. I have to be engaging my mind with something. And I said, well, good luck. I said, that's about all I can handle, 2 hours. And I can't even handle 2 hours. Like I said, I don't even see the place. Because I don't care. I don't care about any place on this earth. This earth has no interest to me. I mean, the people, yes. The earth, no. I've told you this before. People have invited me to places. Oh, well, you should see the mountains in my home country. You should see this. You should see that. And I just don't. I'm sorry. I don't want to see no mountains. I don't want to see no oceans. I don't want to see no freaking monuments. I don't need to see any paintings. I don't need to see anything. I just want to see Jesus Christ. And I want to get out of here. This is a death trap down here. A death trap. I told you this before. I told Juliana that I hated the world. And she really scolded me on that one. Martinico, so she calls me. Martinico, don't say that. You don't hate the world. I said, let me repeat myself. Yes, I do hate the world. And of course, I brought out 1 John for her. And I said, you know, that he who loves the world hates God, basically. Those are your two choices. You either love the world or you love God. You can't have both. So, just like God and mammon, God and earthly sustenance, either you're scrounging for the dollar bills here and the fame and the recognition and all that, or you've completely given up on it, which I have. And you're reaching toward the goal, as Paul says in Philippians, toward the prize. I'm looking for a prize, folks. The prize is not salvation, because salvation is a gift. The prize is the high calling above in Christ Jesus that comes from suffering evil for the evangel, laboring in the evangel. And man, I am buying up stock. I'm buying up stock now because, I'm telling you, probably the best thing that could happen to me is somebody kills me for the faith. If somebody gets pissed at my newsletter or something, I don't want to die or be persecuted for breaking the law or anything like that. So I'm an exemplary citizen. Like, I'm so careful not to do anything wrong. I mean, I just don't want to do anything wrong. I don't even want to get a parking ticket, right? But if I suffer, I don't want to suffer because I've been rude or I've been hateful or I've broken the law. I want to suffer for the evangel. I mean, I'm not going to order it up, you know, it's up to God, but I'm just going to say it's one way to get out of here is to be killed for the faith. I'd be, you know, I'm not sitting here praying for it, but it'd be a double blessing, really. One, you get the hell out of this hellhole. How can I love an eon that crucified Jesus Christ? How can I love this eon? This world, this system of things here crucified Jesus Christ. That happened in our eon. This is eon number 3, right? Paul calls it the present wicked eon in Galatians 1:4. This is the eon that crucified Jesus Christ. That's what this eon's all about. That's its thing, man. It crucifies people who come to save it. That's what it does. This is a parliament of fools down here. I mean, we're surrounded by morons, honestly. I don't mean to disparage anyone. I don't mean to disparage anyone by calling them all morons. I hope I didn't insult anyone. But I'm just saying, faith in Christ is a rare gift, and it's getting pretty frustrating down here. So I just wanted to vent to you a little bit about that. But I'm not going to spend the whole time venting here, although I clearly could. It's definitely in me. But so what I'm going to do is go back to Hebrews chapter 7. Oh, yes, I had this. I'm so excited by this word transference. This, and I gave you an analogy yesterday that as I thought about it between then and now, It's pretty much what I do. I think about transference of the law, like that's my thing. I think about Melchizedek, and I think about the word transfer. Why did Paul use the word transfer here, the transference of law? Then I got that analogy stuck in my head about transferring an organ. And this is it. This is so perfect as to why Israel is in limbo right now and why she cannot do the law, can't even attempt it. And don't even tell me, don't even say, well, if nobody can should even attempt law, then how do people not commit murder? How do people not, you know, commit adultery and all that? It's just because of the Spirit of God, the general Spirit of God, the human conscience given us by God. That'll suffice. In fact, it's even better. It's even better. It's better than the old covenant because, as we're going to see, I'm going to reiterate this, this organ, this heart of the law is in a dead body. The dead body. Okay, here's the analogy. I'm going to read the verse again. Hebrews 7:11. First of all, if indeed then perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for the people have been placed under law with it. That's important to know. Law and priesthood go hand in hand. What need is there for a different priest to arise? And here's verse 12. This is key. For the priesthood being transferred, of necessity there is coming to be a transference of law. So picture this. The law is a beating heart. The law is a heart. And it's in this body called the Old Covenant, called the Levitical priesthood, called the Order of Aaron, called the fleshly precept. Did you get all that? The preceding precept, the fleshly precept, the Old Covenant, the Levitical priesthood. That's the body that this beautiful, red, flush with blood, beating, pulsating heart is, which is the law. The law is perfect. The law is righteous. The law is good. So God puts the law into this thing. Let's just already call it a corpse. It's already a corpse. It doesn't even start as a living body, okay? It starts as a corpse. So let's see if we can jumpstart the corpse with the law. So the law goes into the corpse of the fleshly precept, the old humanity even, the old covenant, the Levitical priesthood. And what happens? The heart, you even in nature, there's no operating room where they put a fresh new heart into a dead body. Even Jesus says, you don't put new wine into old wineskins. That's just a simple physical principle. You don't put old wine into new wine into old wineskins. It bursts. And you don't put a good working heart into a corpse unless you're trying to make a point. That's the whole thing. God was trying to make a point. The corpse of Israel is saying, we can do it. Put the heart in us. We want the law. All that the law has said, we will do. This is the corpse having a conversation with the surgeon who's holding the heart. Put the corpse in us. Put the heart in us. And like God's almost like rolling his eyes like, all right, I'll put the heart in the corpse. All right. This what you want, we'll do it. Puts it in there and he sits back and is like, yeah. Waiting for you to come alive, waiting for the corpse to live. Well, you can wait 5 minutes, you can wait 500 years. It doesn't matter. The corpse is not coming alive. It was, in fact, the corpse, if it is possible, becomes more dead than it was. Just go with my analogy here, okay? More dead than it was. Because the law came, Romans 5:20, so the offenses should increase. Why? Because humans rebel against laws of God. Just by nature. It's just like they rebel against law of all kinds. That's why you're better off leaving a human being alone. Leaving a human being alone, they'll do the right thing. Don't put a sign over a knot hole, that fence over there that I'm pointing to on the car cam here. Don't put a sign that says, thou shalt not look through this knot hole. Don't put that sign up there. Because everybody and his brother's going to be looking through that knot hole where before nobody cared about it. That's exactly what Paul's saying in Romans chapter 7. I didn't think of coveting until the law said, thou shalt not covet. Didn't think of coveting until God put a giant sign over my neighbor's wife that said, do not lust after this gorgeous woman.
Yeah.
You mean that one over there?
Yeah.
So that's the law. So after the experiment, it's not an experiment for God. After the demonstration, let's put it that way, of putting this vital heart in the dead body, waiting for the dead body to respond, instead it just stinks even more. The announcement is made in Hebrews by Paul that there is coming to be a transference. We're going to transfer this heart. Tired of waiting for the corpse to come alive. It ain't going to do it. Demonstration officially over. Now we're going to transfer this into a new covenant, into a new priesthood, into a people whose own hearts have been miraculously changed from hearts of stone to hearts of flesh. But now, where are we in the history of Israel? We are in the time period where the heart has been removed from the corpse and it's being transferred, but it hasn't been dropped into the new body yet. Hasn't been dropped into the new priesthood, because the chief priest hasn't come back yet. Okay? So this is where we are. Watch this. Heart lifted from the corpse of Israel. It's going to go back into Israel, but it's going to go into a regenerated Israel. Going to come into an alive Israel. Going to come into a renewed Israel. Here it comes. Here it comes. Watch it. And we are here. We are here. It's being transferred. There is coming to be a transference of law also. So the heart is in the hands of the surgeon and it's going through the air right now. It's not in this body, it's not in that body. So it's in this nether zone. You cannot do the law. It's like a body can't live without the Spirit of God, or a heart. A body can't live without a heart. So you've taken the heart is not in anybody. So nobody can live yet. Nobody can live yet. When the heart's in the air being transferred, you can't. So it's impossible to, stupid, again, misguided, errant, a zeal without knowledge to even attempt the Ten Commandments. It's zeal without knowledge at best. At worst, it's stupid, because the law is a dispensation of condemnation and death, 2 Corinthians chapter 3. A dispensation of condemnation and death doesn't bring the corpse alive. For the priesthood being transferred, of necessity, there is coming to be a transference of law. A transplant, if you will. A transplant. That's what I'm changing this to. Transplant. I like that. Let's go back to verse 11. If indeed then perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for the people have been placed under law with it, what need is there still for a different priest to arise? Transplant. Like that. All right. Left off yesterday in verse 17, thou art a priest for the eon, according to the order of Melchizedek. For indeed there is coming to be a repudiation of the preceding precept, because it was weak and without benefit. The preceding precept, in my last analogy, is the corpse of Israel. It was weak as any corpse is, and without benefit as any corpse is. Nothing wrong with the law, nothing wrong with the beating heart. It just sat there and it beats in this freaking shell of bones. For the law perfects nothing. There you go. The law perfects nothing when it's put in a dead body. Yet, verse 19, it is the superinduction of a better expectation through which we are drawing near to God. And here's where I left off. Okay, now I'm picking up now from yesterday at the end of the show here. Verse 20, and inasmuch as it was not apart from the swearing of an oath, for these indeed are priests, having become so apart from the swearing of an oath, yet that one with the swearing of an oath by him who was saying to him, what kind of a sentence is this? I don't even want to repeat that. Anyway, the important thing is this quote here, quote, the Lord swears and will not be regretting it. Thou art a priest for the eon, according to the order of Melchizedek, priest for the eon, coming eon, future eon. By so much also as Jesus becomes sponsor of a better covenant. It's better than the old covenant. Why? you might as well ask why a living body is better than a dead body. You just might as well ask that. And these indeed are more than one, having become priests, because death, they're more than one. The priests are more than one, having become priests, because death prevents them from abiding. That was the problem with the old priesthood. Death prevents them from abiding. This works perfectly with my analogy, because the problem is death. Death prevents the priests. Yet this one, capital O, Jesus Christ, because of his remaining for the eon, has an inviolate priesthood. Inviolate. You can't wreck this thing, because it endures, just like the Aeonian times endure, whence also he is able to save to the uttermost those coming to God through him. Coming to God through him, save to the uttermost. This was the purpose of law for Israel. They were to realize that they were dead, and that it had been proven to them that even when they got the gift of this wonderful, amazing heart with beautiful ventricles, lovely aorta, they couldn't do anything with it. So they're supposed to turn in desperation to their Savior. That's what they were supposed to do. But, you know, Israel, you know how Israel is. Yes. Whence he is able to save to the uttermost those coming to God through him, always being alive to be pleading for their sake. Oh, he's always alive. They're not going to pray to the priests, because the priests die. You don't pray to a dead person unless you're a Catholic. Then you pray to a bunch of dead people, including Mary. Pray to Mary, pray to the saints. They're all dead. Only Catholics pray to dead people. How's that working for you? But who's the patron saint of safe driving or whatever? It's supposed to be St. Christopher. You put a St. Christopher medal in your car and everything's cool. Everything's been cool in my car for years, and I don't have a St. Christopher medal. And yet I know people with St. Christopher medals who have gotten into wrecks. How do you explain that? They're praying to dead people. I see dead people. Yes, he's remaining for an eon. He has an inviolate priesthood. And he is saving those who are coming to him because he's alive. That's a real advantage. That's the advantage of Jesus Christ over other pseudo-saviors. That's a great advantage to be alive. It's impressive. Buddha's dead, Muhammad's dead. Not very impressive. No. I like this Jesus Christ because he's alive. He was dead, but he raised from the dead. That was really helpful to Israel. For such a chief priest also became us, benign, innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners. Yeah, he was without sin. That's the great advantage to Israel. And coming to be higher than those of the heavens, who has not necessity daily, even as the chief priest, to be offering up sacrifices previously for their own sins. They had the priests of Israel. I'm going to cut out here pretty soon. The priests of Israel had to offer up sacrifices for their own sins as well as for the sins of the people. Jesus Christ didn't have to do that. That gives him more energy because he doesn't have to take care of his own sins because he was perfect without sin and he completed the law. He fulfilled the law perfectly. Thereupon, for those of the people, yes, yes. But this one, he does once for all time. Love that phrase, once for all time. That is verse 27 of Hebrews 7. I love this chapter of Hebrews, I'm telling you. And I got one more verse here. I'll finish this chapter, and then I'll figure out what I'm going to do tomorrow. For the law is appointing human chief priests who have infirmity. Yes, that's a drawback of the law. Yet the word sworn in the oath, which is after the law, appoints the Son. This is God swearing. And you're telling me now, some people are telling me that God's swearing an oath to make his Son a chief priest for the eon according to the order of Melchizedek, and in the clear fact that this hasn't yet happened, and yet some are telling me that God has given up on that, that it's not important. He promised it, but you know, he just changed his mind and now he's going to fulfill the Melchizedek priesthood somehow spiritually in a different people. So what, we're spiritually the Melchizedek priesthood now? Explain that one to me. The problem is, I think some of you would actually try. But in order to even try to explain it, you have to throw away this Bible. You have to be talking off the top of your head You have to be relating feelings and dreams, and you have to be making analogies and metaphors where there are no analogies and there are no metaphors. You have to take literal passages of scripture and make them metaphorical, and you have to take metaphorical passages of scriptures and make them literal. So many things you have to do to tell a lie.